Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here this week to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson, our Acting Deputy Editor. Now, Sophia, you've basically spent the last few, and will continue to spend the next few weeks commuting to Monaco. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't know why things have lined up in quite the way they have. The concierge at the Fairmont Hotel now basically know me on a first name basis. I can't quite work out whether that means I've completely made it in life or whether something has gone horribly, horribly wrong. Potentially the latter, but time will tell. Basically been heading out to lots of different conferences and hearing from lots of interesting people. So that side of it has been brilliant. So I was out there last week for the first ever Experiential Yachting Forum, which is a new concept that's been put together. And the day was trying to focus around the sort of experience economy surrounding yachts. So the sort of tagline was yachting is more than just the yacht, and looking at everything that went with it.
So that's, it's interesting because in a feature we're going to talk about in a minute in the next issue of the magazine, someone made the comment that owning a yacht now is much less about the physical, it's not about the asset, it's about the experience, right? So you buy the asset for the experience, and it's much more focused on that. So this was all part of that same kind of direction in yacht ownership.
Yeah, I think so. And I think really trying to focus on, you know, the word millennial, I think we all use in a slightly disparaging manner, even though
I definitely use it.
But you are a millennial.
I'm absolutely not a millennial.
You definitely are a millennial.
Absolutely not.
I'm sure you're still a millennial. Yeah. I'm definitely a millennial.
I'm solid Gen X.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and relook at the dates. But, you know, millennials are now buying yachts and will continue to become a bigger and bigger sector of the market moving forwards. And what they want from yachting is, like every generation that has got into yachting has changed what yachting looks like and has changed what's important. Millennials will do the same. And the generations coming below, which are Gen Z and then Gen Alpha, I believe, is
there. Yeah, there's a fancy name now, isn't there, for the alphas? I think someone's coined some fancy new term. Maybe it's just alphas. I think it's just alphas.
Okay. I don't know.
We're going to frantically Google this as soon as this podcast is over.
But this was very much focused around the kind of millennial sector and what they're going to demand. There was a lot of different talk during the day, and it really varied from something. So I actually spoke about owners' experiences and picked out kind of five that we've seen that have really kind of pushed the boundaries of what it's possible to do with their yachts.
I know, actually, even though you were there last week, I still managed to plug a feature that I wrote, the Cocos Island one with Tara Getty, because you were talking about that one at the event, weren't you?
I was, yeah. So now you still, I don't think I actually admitted that you wrote that one, but it did get some airtime.
Excellent.
But that was very much at the kind of vanilla end of the scale. So there were topics, a lot of talk about the metaverse and virtual reality, but then it also varied as far as the healing power of the sound of orca whales.
Wow.
How you can use your yacht as a medical facility. So it really kind of jumped all over the place as to what yachting could do.
Whale therapy is a thing. It's a real thing.
It's a real thing, yeah.
And
what better way than being on a yacht? Andrew Grant Super from Barclay Rand was there, and he spoke a lot about the kind of virtual reality space and the metaverse. He's very open about being a kind of disruptor of the industry. But something that he said that stuck with me was that every yachting company in the next 5 years will have a presence in the metaverse. I'm still not sure that I'm that much clearer on the role of the metaverse or NFTs or quite how it's all going to work. But it did make me realise that I probably need to embrace it further and try and understand it more than I currently do.
Yeah, I've dipped my toe in the water of all this. And we're kind of in talks now to do an NFT for the oceans. So it'll be a charity drop, which is very exciting. Working with some very pedigreed designers on that, with all proceeds going to ocean conservation. The metaverse, it's very frontier, isn't it, at the moment? And we've touched on it in previous podcasts, but there seems to me there's a couple of people developing platforms and no one quite knows which one's going to become the ultimate one. Obviously, Meta has one and there's a few others. And one will gain supremacy over the others, but at the moment it's just a bit of a battle to figure out which one that is.
I think Grant Super's opinion was that the yachting industry doesn't actually necessarily know what it's doing yet, and probably needs to be a bit more careful. But as I say, he's deliberately very disruptive in what he says and wants to challenge a lot of the norms that are seen from within the industry. Someone else who spoke during the day that I found particularly interesting, I hadn't heard him speak directly before, was Matti Zadnikar, who's the owner and founder of CNET, which is a shared ownership model. It came from him being a yacht owner himself and basically working out that it didn't really work for him. He sold his business and kind of was looking for a hobby and something to do and thought, why didn't I try and set this up? And it does now seem to be quite successful. I just find it really interesting as a concept because it does seem one of the kind of strange things about super yachting that lots of people own yachts, and because they're incredibly busy, they actually get to spend a very limited time on board. So this idea of shared ownership seems like a bit of a no-brainer. But then there have been other companies that have tried to do it. The industry, as far as I can tell, has never really fully embraced it. And I can't quite work out where the disconnect is.
Well, shared ownership is very, very common, but it's informal shared ownership. So lots and lots of boats are owned by multiple people. Often partners go into a boat together or three people. I think one of the more famous examples is Seven Sins, which is owned by five people. And so they just chop up the year kind of between them on an informal basis. So often it's friends or business partners or whatever. The formal shared ownership model, the industrialized shared ownership model, as it were, hasn't really succeeded. But CNET is one of the few companies that have made some headway in that space. I think there is a place for it. Will it become mainstream? I don't think so, because I think people, owners, just prefer to do it on a more informal basis between each other. There doesn't necessarily need to be a professional intermediary between them. Having said that, CNET is a functioning, successful, profit-making enterprise. So they have clearly found a space.
Yeah, and Matthew was saying he has an increasing number of people coming and kind of asking for him to be the matchmaker in a way. So saying, you know, we've got this yacht, but actually we do think we'd like to look at the shared ownership, and have you got someone that you think might fit or might work with us, which is quite interesting. He also spoke about some of the kind of practicalities. So they basically follow the yachts around with these sort of containers, you know, crates, so that they can completely swap in different owners, you know, everything from bed sheets to family photographs to board games, so that every time each owner comes on board, it does feel very much like their yacht rather than a yacht that has multiple owners.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wish CNET all the very, very best. I mean, I've been in the yachting industry for quite a long time, scarily long time now, you know, everything from canal boats up to super yachts, and at every level of the yachting industry, from those very, very smallest boats to the very, very biggest ones, people have tried to introduce this concept and it's never really worked properly. So I'm naturally, my skepticism runs amok whenever I hear about a shared ownership structure. But again, you know, Matty's obviously much smarter than me because he's figured it out.
No, well, I think I share your skepticism, but that was why it was really interesting to hear him talk about it, because when you hear him talk about it, it does seem such an obvious solution. Not for everyone, you know, yeah. It's never going to be for everyone, but for a proportion of the industry. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see with that. And then some other speakers that I just wanted to highlight at the end of the day: Sarah Colburn, Marie Solomon from Njord by Bergman Design House, and Timur Bozkar, who's of course a former Young Designer of the Year winner. They spoke about kind of the design side and designing for this new generation. So Bergman have just completed a refit on 56 meter Galaxy. We've got some photos on the website. I don't know whether you've had a look. It's
I have had a look. I've seen the photos. They are something else.
They are out of this world is the phrase, because the owner obviously has a fascination with space, and that was a lot of the design brief. So the owner is actually a gentleman called Dave Hedgewood, and we've got an owner's club interview with him in the June issue. I just thought it was really fascinating because there was a lot of talk about kind of the new generation of your owners, and he really is it. He's really cool.
First time owner. DJ.
Burning Man fanatic. Yeah. Made his money in gaming. You know, he is the future, and it's really cool to see what he's doing. And I think what's also cool with that yacht is he's planning to basically live on it. He's not saying, you know, it's just somewhere I want to spend 2 weeks a year. It's kind of going to be his main base to create his music and live his life, which I think is a really kind of exciting to think about that next generation coming through.
Punchy first boat, 56 metre.
There's time for you yet, Stuart.
No, there's not. But I've met Mr. Dave Hedgewood. He's a lovely bloke. Njord by Bergman Design House have done with this boat is something else. And they did it in 5 months as well. It's a phenomenal transformation. The interior is, yeah, like you said, literally out of this world. I urge you to go to the website. In fact, we'll put a link in a description. Go have a look at it for yourself. You'll be blown away. It's just a crazy, wild interior, but right up their street. And yeah, and the June issue. You can meet Dave for yourself.
Yeah. And then Timur was obviously talking about some of the projects he's got on. I feel like we always kind of claim him as one of our own. I'm not sure he feels the same way in return, but he's obviously been working on the incredible conversion of the OK or OK yacht. He had some great video of that. And he also has another really exciting project underway, which he has confirmed that he is going to talk to Boat International about, but I don't think I can reveal any further details at this stage.
Very interesting. Yeah, that OK project. So that's the one that's semi-submersible. So the whole ship kind of sinks, 46-meter sailing yacht can cruise onto the mothership and then it rises up and then it sails away, obviously. Wild project. We're doing our best to get you some more info on that. Yeah, stay tuned.
And then, as you mentioned, I'm going back to Monaco again next week for the spring pock-up. Sorry.
Spring cock-up. We're keeping that in, by the way. We're definitely keeping that in.
Anyway, so I'm heading back to Monaco next week again for the spring pop-up, where I'm going to be moderating a discussion on emerging shipyard destinations. I've got some really great panellists to share their insight, including Espen Bueno, two leading brokers from Fraser Yachts, and Patrick von Seidel from Turquoise Yachts, as well as Artur Polozanski. I'm going to have to get better at pronouncing his name by Tuesday, who is the PR manager for Sunreef Yachts.
Well, you have a Polish background, don't you?
Yeah, I really do.
So I'm stunned you can't pronounce that name.
Yeah, no. My sister's called Katarzyna. I mean, I absolutely should be able to pronounce Polish names.
Shameful.
Yeah.
Shameful. Your Polish forebears are turning in their graves.
Yeah. Terrible. But yes, I'll be back for that. And actually, we're going to discuss some of the data that will kind of feed into that conversation in Monaco at the end of the podcast.
So what are they? I mean, just very broadly, the emerging shipyard destinations.
So for the purposes of this talk, obviously, there'll be a heavy focus on Turkey.
Yeah.
Which obviously you are the expert in, having gone on your grand tour of Turkey earlier this year. And that's the data that we're going to look at the end of the podcast. Obviously Poland as well, and looking at what Sunreef have done over there and how they've kind of changed the market over there. And then also looking at China, Australia, a little bit at Scandinavia as well and what they're doing. I think these are kind of, they'll be the main points of discussion for Tuesday. There obviously are a few others out there, but I think those are the main kind of ones that are starting to make a name.
We need a catch-all term, don't we, for those emerging yachting industrial centres. I'll leave that one with you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, while Sophia's been swanning around the south of France, educating all and sundry about various interesting things, we've been working very furiously on the June issue. And when I was looking at today's podcast, I realised I don't think we ever talked really a lot about the May issue, because I'm trying to link a few threads together here, so bear with me. Emerging yachting destinations, obviously. Southampton used to be a great yachting manufacturing centre. In the May issue, we have a feature about a gentleman and a shipyard that is trying to bring back historic shipbuilding to Southampton. So a re-emerging yachting destination. How about that? Was that somehow threaded together? I don't know. I'll find out later. So anyway, this story is in the May issue right now, which is on the shelves, and it's a great one. It's about a company called the Calshot Group, and it's named after this tender tug called Calshot, which is a 52-meter boat that is being now converted into a super yacht. So Ian Wace is the man behind the yard, and it's his mission to return historic shipbuilding to Southampton, particularly to the waters of the River Itchen. So the yard has already done another tug called Rita, which has been restored by the yard. And it was at the facility also that Wace's boat, 50-meter Alicia, was brought back to life. So I spent a night or two on Alicia a few years ago, and it is absolutely superb. The craftsmanship, the attention to detail, off the charts, just mind-blowing. They put millions of hours, 1.5 million man-hours of work into that boat, I think is the number. And it really shows. So now Calshot, this 52 meter, is going to get the same treatment with the same design team, Design Unlimited. So the boat has had a pretty amazing history thus far. She's 92 years old, a grand dame. She started life, as mentioned, as a tug tender. She carrying passengers out to the great liners of the day, including stars like Liz Taylor and Cary Grant. So she was requisitioned by the Admiralty in the Second World War and fitted with anti-aircraft guns. Churchill trod her decks, and she even served as an HQ ship on D-Day. After that, she was brought into service as a ferry in Galway Bay and renamed Galway Bay, and was eventually bought by Southampton City Council with a mind to exhibiting her, given her pedigreed and storied history, in a maritime museum. But that never really happened, and decrepitude was setting in. She was in a real state when Wace bought her, and Calshot Group CEO Glenn Reed even said they could build an exact replica of Calshot in half the time and at half the cost, but that's not the point, because it wouldn't be Calshot. So it's the whole Ship of Theseus thing again, isn't it? Look, I mean, the story is amazing, because it's no one knows about this shipyard. That's the other crazy thing. So it kind of sprung up, and they've completely redeveloped the site. It's a new-ish shed, but it's more about the facilities themselves. It's almost like walking into a movie set. It is so pristine and so perfect, the restoration work, that it really has to be seen to be believed. And it's in this kind of slightly kind of run-down road in Southampton. And then you turn into the yard, and it's like stepping back in time. It is just phenomenal what they've done there. And they've staffed up. There's a couple of hundred people there now working. So I would encourage anyone who has a restoration project to consider the Calshot Group, because it's really quite an impressive facility. And Calshot itself will be just an insane project.
Yeah, the pictures look incredible in the magazine. I'd never heard of it either until you went and visited. Was it earlier this year and you put some photos on Instagram? And I was like, where on earth is Stuart, and that, I had absolutely no idea that it existed. So yeah, it's an incredible story.
It really is an incredible story. Ian Wace himself appreciates that it's a slightly mad undertaking. And he said in the feature, there's a fine line between genius and madness. I urge everyone to read the feature and have a look at the photos. And if you get the opportunity, go and see the yard, because it's pretty wild. That was the May issue. So go buy it now. The June issue, which we've literally just put to bed, which will be on the stands in a few weeks. It's got our Ocean Awards winners in it, with many of their inspiring stories, and a feature about leaving your yacht to charity, which is actually a much bigger thing than I thought it was. The 44.6-meter Path from Baltic Yachts is our cover boat, but it's another feature that I wanted to flag particularly. It's all about the super yacht boom we've been experiencing since summer 2020. So this boom is now almost 2 years old, and it shows no signs of slowing. The most reactive indicator, of course, is the brokerage market. And so far in 2022, it's tracking pretty steadily the performance of 2021, which, as we all know, was a record-breaking year.
Yeah, I think I'm still in the champagne at the moment. I was the least pessimistic of the three of us. So, as long as it keeps tracking, then I think I'm comfortable.
Yeah, you might end up with a bottle. The end of the Marks and Spencer's
policy. So little, it wasn't Marks and Spencer's.
But I mean, that was the question asked in the feature. How long can this boom last? Central banks are going to start hiking interest rates to curb runaway inflation. Banks have lowered their forecast for global growth, and Russia's appalling invasion of Ukraine is acting as a further drag on global growth. So we spoke to some of the industry's leading lights and gathered their thoughts. And one thing I found particularly interesting was that everyone almost universally agreed that all the new people that have found their way into yachting will stick with it, which was reassuring, because my natural fear would be that people bought in haste and might have ended up with unsuitable boats that they might then have trouble getting rid of. But that wasn't a general concern shared by others in the feature. Which was great. It's just me in my little paranoid bubble.
Just 2 o'clock in the morning, just lying there just concerned
waking
about
up in a cold sweat. But generally, the feeling also was that when we do land from this boom, it will be a softer one and not a repeat of 2008-2009, which is certainly reassuring. And I just hope they're right.
Me too. Just a quick update while we were talking about other things. So the millennials is anyone born between 1981 and 1996. So I think you're only a few years.
Born in 78. So I'm
3 years out. There we go.
But But definitely not a
millennial. But definitely not a millennial, just to be clear to everyone. Stuart's definitely not a millennial.
Just to make that very, very clear. So that's the super yacht boom. When will it end? Hopefully not soon, but it will obviously come to an end. For some great insight, pick up the June issue. Have a read of that particular feature and all the others. It's a great, great issue. Right, I suppose we should talk some news.
We should. Should we start with the 67-metre Bonetti Calex has been launched and is close to completion. So the yacht, which was formerly known as Project Finestra, was sold to an experienced American owner with the buyer introduced by Northrop & Johnson in June 2019. Designed by Giorgio Cassetta, Calex has been built in steel and aluminium by the Italian yard with a 7-cabin layout that can accommodate 14 guests. One quite interesting thing is that it also has 10 cabins for 17 crew members, including 3 doubles for the captain, first officer and chief engineer.
Wow, they each get a double.
Yeah, and the owners apparently specifically requested that the crew quarters included materials and furnishings of a similar quality that had been used in the guest accommodation.
That's something we're seeing more and more.
Yeah, good yacht to get a job on if you're listening. It's busy week for the yard, which has also just had the 6th unit of the popular Oasis 40 metre series has hit the water as well and has been christened Vicious Rumour the Third.
Vicious Rumour the Third. They've just struck gold, that Oasis series, haven't they? Phenomenal. Congratulations to Bonetti. That 67 metre platform's doing great things for them too. And the Cassetta, Giorgio Cassetta, a very accomplished Italian designer, will be at our Super Yacht Design Festival in June. Buy your tickets now.
Yeah, not far away now. I feel like we've been talking about it for a long time, but suddenly it's going to...
I've got to start putting some dates together for that.
Yeah.
That's giving me a real kick up the butt.
We're going to do some preparation for your panels.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always thoroughly prepared, Sophia, as you well know. The next, we have the fact that Turkish shipyard New Marine has launched the first unit of its 22.6-metre 22XP series. The yacht marks the entry-level addition to the XP range, offering prospective customers the explorer capabilities of its larger XP models, but in a more compact package. I actually saw this boat when I was in Turkey. I'll tell you more in a minute. So the 22XP features an interior and exterior designed by Can Yalman, with Umberto Taglia, here we go. I don't have an Italian background, so I struggle. Umberto Tagliavini is responsible for naval architecture. New Marine founder and chairman Omar Malaz said, "We felt that the market wanted a smaller entry model than the 26XP we were offering to date. She's bold and futuristic and at the same time very elegant. And this is what our clients like about our boats, in addition to seaworthiness, safety and comfort on board. And we use the best materials and technologies." So New Marine is in great form as well at the moment. They cannot sell enough of these XPs. And from my conversations with Omer and Ali from the shipyard, are that Americans, the US market just loves these XP models because they are quite very Bahamas friendly. They're very voluminous for their length. They're very capable. So I think if you're looking for those kind of modest, like kind of pocket explorer for the Exumas, the Bahamas, and a bit further down the Caribbean chain, then these are right up the street of a lot of that American market.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how this slightly smaller entry model goes down. Presumably incredibly well.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I mean, the 22, yeah. So I looked around the first 22XP, and I mean, compared to a 22-metre model, from even a decade or 15 years ago, they're just what they can pack into these hulls now is truly, truly impressive. So good luck to New Marine with that model. I'm sure they'll sell a bundle of them.
Next up, we have the 32-metre Southern Wind sailing yacht, Sorvind. Did I get that right?
I think so.
Hopefully. Has been delivered. The yacht departed Southern Wind's facilities in Cape Town and is currently undertaking her maiden voyage to the Mediterranean. As the 5th unit in the successful SW105 mini-series, the sailing yacht's been built to a proven design that called for high-calibre blue-water cruising, a quality that is now being put to the test on her maiden voyage, which will be about 7,000 nautical miles.
So Southern Winds do the best shakedowns in the world. I mean, so many owners do it. They pick them up in Cape Town, they deliver them to the Med, which is just the best possible way to shake down your new boat and find its... faults and snags, and not that there are many on these boats. They're very, very well put together boats indeed.
The yacht has actually been named after the Norwegian word for southern wind in a fitting tribute to the yard which built her. Sawwind is expected to join the charter fleet, and she's going to make her debut appearance at the Monaco Yacht Show, hopefully. So it should be lovely to have great addition to the sailing yachts there for 2022.
Absolutely.
Finally, Stuart, it's time for Catamaran Corner.
Finally. This is what it's all about, really. The Boating's Briefing podcast is just an excuse to talk about catamarans. So in Catamaran Corner this week, we have the news that Peugeot and Wider Yachts have revealed a new 27-metre hybrid catamaran model. The designers have dubbed the new Eco Yacht 88 model a spacecraft on account of its high-volume interiors and efficient design. Equipped with 50 square metres of solar panels to drive the eco-electric propulsion, the Wider Peugeot Eco Yacht 88 is offered as an aluminium build with a boomless mainsail that allows for easy yet high-performance cruising. Construction will take place at the Wider shipyard in Ancona, with early orders scheduled to be delivered in just 20 months' time. Right, data. It's all Turkey.
It is all about Turkey, and it is, as ever, brought to you by BoatPro, the superyacht industry's leading market intelligence platform. So we're partly doing this because I'm obviously talking about it in Monaco on Tuesday, but there's also another nice link because the 47-metre Mengi Ye La Vie, the first hull of the Virtus 47 series, was launched a couple of weeks ago. So it's nice to see what Turkey's doing. Apparently, the Mengi Ye order book has 9 projects currently scheduled for delivery between now and 2024. So they are another busy, busy yard. So the current Turkish fleet is made up of 678 yachts, which gives you a total length of 23,597 metres, with an average length overall of 34.8 metres. It's a relatively young fleet, so 16.1 years is the average age, which I meant to go back and dig out what the average age for the American fleet was that we spoke about a few weeks ago, and I forgot. Can you remember, Stuart?
I think but it was 30 something. I think it's around that.
It is very old in comparison. And what else is interesting about the fleet is that it's nearly a 50-50 balance between motor and sailing yachts. So 371 motor in comparison to 301 sailing yachts. This is mainly down to, as you expect, the significance of gullets. Anushka Hempel once told me off for saying it wrong. I've never been able to say it ever again without living in fear of being told off. So 106 meter Dream was of course built in Turkey before her conversion in Greece, but if you don't count her, then the largest yacht that's been built in Turkey to date remains the iconic 88 meter Maltese Falcon. Turkey is currently third in the global order book with 91 projects under construction. This is a significant increase from 2019 when there were just 66 projects under construction. So particularly the COVID period seems to have really help feed this kind of surge in Turkish yacht building, which is great. Interestingly, the average length overall has remained relatively stable. So it was 45.4 metres in 2019. And in 2022, it's actually just a little bit lower at 44.1 metres. So there's thought to be a project on hold, but the current largest project that we know is still under construction is 87 metre Project Vento, which is, of course, being built by Turquoise and will become their new flagship when she's delivered in 2024.
So that on-hold project is the Dream Ship Victory, the big, massive wooden sailing boat. But we wrote a story about her for the website not too long ago, didn't we? Just kind of an update on what's happening. But actually, I mean, I don't think a lot is happening. Turquoise's flagship 87-metre Vento, that's really exciting. Turquoise have got six or seven projects, but they're super busy, as are most Turkish yards, frankly.
It's interesting with Turquoise, we were talking about it a little bit earlier in the week, that they are kind of, as Ocean Co expands its kind of bigger builds, Turquoise is kind of actually going larger than perhaps you initially thought was their space in the market.
Well, do you remember when there was all that signalling, wasn't there, when Al Bawani bought Turquoise? So Ocean Co were going to do 18 above, Turquoise is going to do up to 80. Well, that's been blown out the water because Ocean Co is almost exclusively a 100-meter plus builder now, isn't it? So naturally, there's a gap left that has sucked Turquoise bigger, which is great for Turquoise, and they're very very capable yard. And so as I saw, I had a tour around there. When was I there? Like 2 months ago, I think. I spent a week in Turkey. I cannot sing the praises of the Turkish industry enough. There's some just brilliant, brilliant boats being built out there, really interesting projects, and they are so, so busy. And it's great to see that there's been, there was a slight cloud, I think, around Turkish yacht construction in the past, but I think that's been fully dispersed now. There's some really, really beautiful boats coming out of that country, and will continue to be, as because you know the order book is so, so full. 91 projects in build currently in Turkey, third in the global order book. I'll be back. I have to go back. It's no harm. I love Istanbul.
Yeah, I think you need to. Yeah. We need more anecdotes, if nothing else. We've gone over all your anecdotes.
Raked over those coals. So that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boat Briefing. Tune in on Monday for our big boat interview, which I'm hoping will be with Guillaume Hodet, the man behind the extraordinary air yacht project that's been making some waves, or lack of waves.
Oh, gosh. You went there.
Since it's an airship.
Gosh, what an way to end.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So this episode has been mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time. And for those of you in the UK, have a wonderful bank holiday weekend. I think the sun's even expected to make an appearance. See you next time.